Welcome to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons. On today's show, we're going to hear about the Veterans Resilience Project and get an update from the Minnesota National Guard. But first, it's time for Generally Speaking, a weekly message from the Adjutant General of the Minnesota National Guard, Major General Sean Mankey.
In the National Guard, we place a high value on physical fitness, just as important as our physical well-being as our mental well-being. I want to bring attention to the concept of resiliency and what it means for our soldiers and airmen. Resiliency is about our ability to adjust to and recover from adversity. While serving in the National Guard, we juggle many responsibilities, from family commitments to our civilian careers, all while fulfilling our commitment to our nation's defense. At times, we can feel overwhelmed. It is a natural response to our fast-paced lives. If you are experiencing difficulties maintaining this balance, I want you to know that help is available and that asking for help is a sign of strength. Our psychological health coordinators offer confidential assistance. You can call them 24 hours a day at 651-282-4029. That's 651-282-4029.
Thank you, General Mankey. For more information, please go to minnesotamilitaryradio.com. My co-host for today's show is the retired State Command Sergeant Major Doug Wortham. Doug, welcome back to the studio.
Hey, Tom. Once again, it's great to be in the studio with you and looking forward to this segment and speaking with our first guest.
And Doug, we're fortunate today. We've got Lieutenant Colonel Jake Helderstad calling in from Kuwait. He serves as the Battalion Commander of the Minnesota National Guard's 1st Combined Arms Battalion, 194th Armor Regiment, currently deployed to the Middle East as Task Force 1194 as part of Task Force Spartan. And Colonel Helgestad, welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio.
Thank you very much.
Sir, we're fortunate to talk to you in June, and we're going to find out in the first couple segments today. It's been pretty busy over in Kuwait, but before we get to some of that, could you tell us about the mission of the 194 over in the Middle East?
So we're deployed here. We have currently 10 companies, a little over 1,100 soldiers, and our mission is the Rapid Response Force within Central Command. Specifically, we deployed with our tanks and our infantry fighting vehicles. So we are the mechanized infantry armor contingent of that Rapid Response Force. So we're stationed in Kuwait. Basically forward deployed for any event that may arise where we would have to be deployed for that specific incident.
And Doug and Colonel, in the second segment here, we're going to talk about that Rapid Response Force that had to go to Kabul, Afghanistan. But before we do that, sir, we wanted to get just a general update on your troops. I think when we talked to you in June, there was some, let's call it PT, physical training. You had some kind of a tournament going on over there.
My executive officer and I, we kind of came up with this idea. The Olympics were going to be happening. So we're like, hey, we should do something similar. So it was after the 4th of July, we did basically a stand down where we gave everybody like 4 days off. Our junior enlisted council came up with 9 various events, everything from a courage tournament to bar Olympics that had darts, pool, and foosball to a street hockey tournament, volleyball. And so that, because of the heat, we did everything in the evening. The tournaments themselves, or the games themselves, I am proud to say that my team won the street hockey tournament. But I also would like to thank Defending the Blue Line. They had provided sticks and goalie equipment. So we took over Minnesota style. We took over a tennis court and played street hockey at night and had quite a bit of crowds, for some of our games. And people would ask, where are we from? And they said Minnesota, and it was like, oh, yeah, that makes perfect sense.
We ended it with
a cookout and our chaplain with his MWR, Morale Welfare Fund, was able to actually buy like medallions. So we gave winners, the top three got medallions, they got gift cards. So it was not quite a halfway break, but it definitely was something for team building, unity, just to let everybody kind of take a break.
So we're speaking with Colonel Jake Helgestad. Sir, United Hero League has been just a great supporter, obviously, of military, the service members, their kids, and for our soldiers, our airmen, when we're deployed, the morale aspect is extremely important from a command perspective, of course. So putting something like this together must have been, you know, a pretty neat thing. So how was the participation? I mean, did you have like this waiting list of people wanting to play? What was that like?
Yeah, so I didn't make it mandatory per se. I made it mandatory like, hey, every company will provide teams, but it was, a volunteer roster, or your company will just, you'll just lose if you don't show up. So we had 12 street hockey teams. There was a softball tournament. It was overwhelming. We had hundreds of people participate. We had a fun run. The first and only Walt Straka fun run, 5K. Walt had passed away on the 4th of July, so we made it a memorial. And that was a mandatory event. So, you know, you had 1,000 people running that morning. So overall, it was good because we did everything at night. So everybody had the days to just relax. And then in the evening when it was cooler, we had these games. And we're in the military, so everybody's a little competitive, wanted to win. But it was all in good sportsmanship. And it was fun. I enjoyed it.
And you know that I'm a big hockey fan. And so I just need to ask, did the victory of your team, did that come under contestment at all?
One of the maneuver companies that we beat, they said we cheated, but when it's like 5-1, I don't see how that's feasible, because it was a pretty good shellacking.
Colonel, this is Tom again, sir. It's a long deployment. Your soldiers are away from home for training, and then go over to Kuwait and get to where they need to do their business and spend most of their time training so they can be ready for this rapid reaction force, and I would think that this hockey event at night gives them a little relief from all of that intense training.
Essentially we have to be ready for anything or nothing. Like you mentioned, it is long. I mean, you know, a 10, 11 month deployment does get long. So I had always looked to break it up into smaller segments, either, having a capstone training event that you would kind of take a pause to reset, or in this sense, these games that we had in July. Next week, I believe, is MEA back in Minnesota, so we're having an MEA break here. And it coincides with the Kuwaiti holiday, so we can't train. So from approximately Tuesday through next Sunday, we will have off because it's MEA weekend, and then we'll do something similar for Thanksgiving. So trying to mirror the vacation dates or the days off in the States to provide some normalcy, but then also just to give people time. You can't be on all the time. You definitely need to relax sometimes and just hang out and not do Army stuff, because you, like I said, you have to kind of decompress.
Sir, in the next segment, we're going to talk about that rapid reaction force because they were called to Afghanistan. But just to finish up this segment, can you tell us what kind of support you've been receiving from home?
Yeah, it's in a positive way. There's so much that I don't know if I'd even be able to name everybody that has supported us. So, you know, it's phenomenal in that sense because everything from, I swear to God, there's a new bag of cookies that comes every single day from somebody back in the States, or coffee, just toiletries. Our chaplain manages it all. So, you know, if you need anything, you can go to the chaplain's tent and get whatever you need. So there's an entire room. So it's quite phenomenal. And like I said, sometimes it is so overwhelming. And I don't know if saying thank you is actually enough for the amount of stuff that we do get.
Well, sir, it's a good reminder that those of us back here at home know that you're there, we remember you're there, and we're trying to send some support. We're speaking to Lieutenant Colonel Jake Helgestad, the commander, battalion commander of the Minnesota National Guard's 1st Combined Arms Battalion, 194th Armor Regiment, currently deployed to the Middle East as Task Force 1 of the 194. Sir, when we come back, we're going to take a short break. When we come back, we're going to talk about the troops that you had to send over to Kabul This is Minnesota Military Radio. Please stay with us. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons. My co-host today is Doug Wortham, and we've been talking to Lieutenant Colonel Jacob Helgestad. He was the battalion commander of the Minnesota National Guard's 1st Combined Arms Battalion, 194th Armor Regiment, currently deployed to the Middle East as Task Force 1 of the 194. And, sir, as we talked about in the first segment, one of the things that you have to be ready for in this deployment is to be trained extensively and to be prepared as the response force in case troops are needed somewhere else in that part of the world.
Yeah, it is, like I said, is we have to be ready for anything, everything, or nothing. But we have a very deliberate sequence that we follow. If we were to get notified, and in the case of Afghanistan, I got somebody knocked on my door at exactly 11:17 at night. Funny enough, and Sergeant DeWortham can attest to this, every soldier's fear is to oversleep. And so I was supposed to actually fly out the next morning to another country. And I thought I overslept when I heard the knocking on my door. And so I jumped out of bed and somebody's standing there going, "Hey, sir, we have to be in Afghanistan in 24 hours. And as, dead sleep to shaking your head like, okay, am I hearing the words that you're saying? And so we got notified at, 11:15 at night. And approximately the 17th through the 19th of August is when we flowed into Afghanistan, and then we left on the 30th. But we went from the middle of the night to following our sequence that we have that's very deliberate, specifically for this case where, emotions are high, the unknown is there, and you just do one step after another. So it's very analytical as you kind of let everything sink in, so then you can absorb the information for your mission and not have to figure out what do we have to do next because it's already all done. And so as the situation developed, we moved, we identified what we had to send to Afghanistan, what we had to keep back here in Kuwait, and then we moved to the airfield and kind of sat in a waiting game for a little bit.
So, sir, this is a great point. You're talking about this planning that goes in it, and I don't know that the general public per se really understands the importance of the events that lead up to a deployment, a rotation at an NTC or a warfighter or other things, and then to have these battle plans in place so that when you get a knock on the door close to midnight. And you're expected to be prepared within 24 hours. You have a plan to follow.
Yes, we had, oddly enough, we had an Excel document that we had created prior to, we had the unit that we replaced had a product. And when we were down at Fort Bliss, Texas, doing our training, we continually modified it. And so as soon as the call came in our operations center, we had it up on our big screen TVs. And that becomes the anchor product that drives the entire task force, all 1,000 people working in unity against events in time. And so that way, as I give my guidance of like, I need you to focus on this or that, more tied toward the operational aspect of the mission, all the the logistics, the personnel aspect of it, they all know these certain manifesting you got on an airplane, that has to be done by this specific time. And so it allows people to focus again on a sequence of events when emotions are running high to get where we need to go in that amount of time. And I have always said that no one will ever wait on us. You tell us what time we need to be ready to leave, and that's when we will be done. And in this case, we modified our checklist to remove items that weren't applicable, and then we were ready, and then we waited on our flights.
We're speaking with Lieutenant Colonel Jacob Helgestad. He's the battalion commander of the Minnesota National Guard's 1st Combined Arms Battalion, 194 Armor Regiment. And, sir, your mission, Task Force Spartan, that doesn't stop. So you get this call to go to Afghanistan, but that's not the only thing that you have to take care of. I understand that you had some other responsibilities going on at the same time. Can you tell us a little bit about what your medics were doing?
Yes. Yeah, so we had, like, our infantry and armor units, we had to go fly to Kabul. There had already been planning, potential planning for Afghan refugees to come here to Camp Bering. So one of my sustainment companies, I had identified him, like, hey, you'll be the mayor of this one of the areas, like one of the 10 areas. And then my medical company, they got tasked and they medically screened over 5,000 Afghans as they came here. And then once they did that initial screening, they essentially became like a doctor's office for a town, a small town of 5,000 people over the course of the 2+ weeks. So, you know, the maneuver units were in Kabul doing our mission, and then the sustainment part of our task force was here providing assistance to the Afghans that had been evacuated out. And then on top of that, to make it, only because that wasn't interesting enough, we had to simultaneously prepare to send 14 tanks and a bunch of other vehicles and 175 people to go to Egypt for a multinational exercise called Bright Star. So we were operating in three countries simultaneously over the span of about 3 weeks, and all very high profile, some very stressful. But everybody rose to the occasion, and I can say that everybody in the task force contributed greatly and set the standard and achieved what I would expect as a commander or hope for as a commander. And you know, the state of Minnesota can be proud because everybody stepped up to this generational event, and we did what we were asked to do, and we did it with great integrity.
Colonel, we just got a few minutes left. I want to ask you about we understand about 400 soldiers were deployed to Kabul, to the airport, a very intense situation, and that they did a wonderful job of supporting the withdrawal of those folks that we could get out quickly. How were they when they came back? What kind of shape were they in physically, mentally, and how are your troops doing now, sir?
So it is, I always say, like, every, you know, the Kabul is everybody's own individual story. For me, it was a combination of of Kosovo, of Iraq, and then the riots in June. Like, all of it kind of rolled into one. I can tell you, I was on the last plane out, and I think everybody slept for the 3 hours. Like, I rolled up in my Wubi on the floor. There was no seats in the C-17. We just got in there and we took off. And I'm not really sure anybody talked because it was just, like, physically and mentally exhausted from two straight weeks. And then when we got here, got back to Kuwait, I gave everybody a day off and then 3 days to reset. And then we had to be ready for whatever was called next. And so that's the challenge that we have here of, you know, we're at air quotes here. We get days off, but not really. We always have to be prepared because that's our mission and our responsibility.
And, sir, for all our listeners back home, a lot of them have families that are deployed with you. How are our troops today? Are they ready to go? Are they ready for the next rapid response?
Yeah, everybody is ready for, you know, whatever happens next. I would say most importantly, tomorrow we will issue our order to our task force itself for us to start our redeployment back to Minnesota. So, you know, middle of January through February, we will come back to Fort Bliss, Texas, and then be back in Minnesota. So so it's good. Everybody's focused, ready for what's next, but then looking as we start to prepare to come home.
Good time of the deployment, sir, when you can get ready to brief and train in the next unit that's coming in to replace you.
Yeah, when you can start to count on double digits how many days are left, you know, you get a little euphoric.
Well, Colonel, we appreciate you taking time out of your schedule to join us today. Any final thoughts for our listeners back here in Minnesota?
Yeah, I mean, again, just the, you know, to the families, I, you know, we greatly appreciate all the support that all the soldiers get. As I said at our deployment ceremony at Camp Ripley was, you know, this, nobody needs to deploy by themselves. Like, this isn't a unilateral event. So there is, you know, support for people. There's always somebody else for you. And then collectively that has, it's very apparent, like, with all the support that we get from the FRGs, from family members. It is, again, sometimes I don't think saying thank you is enough.
Colonel, I want to thank you for joining us today on Minnesota Military Radio.
Thank you very much.
Hey, sir, be safe.
Yep, thanks.
That was Lieutenant Colonel Jake Helgestad, serving as the battalion commander of the Minnesota National Guard's 1st Combined Arms Battalion, 194th Armor Regiment, currently deployed to the Middle East as Task Force 1 of the 194, part of Task Force Spartan. Please stay with us. When we come back, we're going to talk about the Veterans Resilience Project. This is Minnesota Military Radio. Welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons. My co-host today is Doug Wortham. And in a moment, we're going to talk about the Veterans Resilience Project. But first, it's time for the Commissioner's Corner, a weekly update from the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs. Now, here's Commissioner Larry Herkey.
As I settle in my role of Commissioner, Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs, I continue to be impressed by the tremendous work our folks do here. The Veterans Homes Division provides a continuum of long-term care for its residents, with a strong emphasis on remembering and recognizing the service and sacrifices of all veterans. The 5 veterans homes operating in Minnesota are located in Minneapolis, Hastings, Silver Bay, Laverne, and Fergus Falls. These homes focus on providing excellent care and services that Minnesotans expect of our state's military heroes. We also have 3 future state veterans homes on the horizon in Preston, Montevideo, and Bemidji. Stay tuned for more. In addition to overseeing the 5 state veteran homes, the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs oversees more than 20 state programs that help eligible veterans and their families secure state and federal benefits. These teams also provide programs and services relating to higher education, benefits, burials, claims, outreach, homelessness, and veterans preference. Key partnerships include the Veterans Service Organizations, County Veterans Service Officers, and a number of public and private service providers. I look forward to continuing to work with these important organizations to serve our veterans here in Minnesota.
Thank you, Commissioner Herkey. For more information, please go to MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com. Jim Finley is a Vietnam-era Army veteran and a board member of the Veteran Resilience Project, and he's joining us again today in the studio. And we last saw you, Jim, you were a member of DEED, and you were working for a living.
I was.
What happened?
Well, it came time to retire and turn it over to somebody else. So we've got a great new director at DEED working with Veterans Employment Programs named Ray Duha.
And we've had Ray on the show, and we talked to him quite often. We got a message from him at the end of the show today that we'll read. But, Jim, even though you retired from gainful employment, you're still out to helping veterans.
I am. In fact, I've heard people joke about they're busier now that they're retired than they were when they were working, and that's my case too, but it's all great work.
So Veterans Resilience Project do?
Veterans Resilience Project is a 501c3 that was started by a lady by the name of Elaine Nguyen. In 2014, 2015, roughly, and is all about providing trauma therapy, EMDR, which is eye movement desensitization and reprocessing, to service members, both in the military and veterans who have discharged from the military.
And Jim, you brought another guest with you today. Would you like to introduce him?
I would. I've got Eric Wickheiser with me. Eric is the board chair for Veterans Resilience Project and a great Navy veteran, and we were thrilled to have him join our team.
Eric, welcome to Minnesota Military Radio.
Well, thank you very much. And he mentioned about submarines, and I got to tell you, I am one proud submariner.
Sir, and, you've got to be the tallest submariner that I think I've met. How'd you fit in those things?
Well, as I said, I've got a lot of bumps on my head from hitting the doors as we go through the hatches.
Well, we've got an old boy show going today because we've got 3 Vietnam-era veterans, and then, of course, we got this young retired Command Sergeant Major over here. But, Eric, can you tell us a little bit? You are the board chair of the Veterans Resilience Project. How long have you done that, and where did you find Jim Finley?
Well, that's a good question. I've been doing that for about 3 years now, and just really pleased and honored to be a part of just a fantastic team that's providing help for Minnesota veterans.
So, sir, what kind of help can our veterans expect from the Veterans Resilience Project?
Well, the kind of help we provide is that some of our veterans come back and they've got a problem. It may be a little one or it may be a really big one. And we take them in and we give them what's called EMDR therapy, which are free sessions for them. And it really helps because we did a study back in 2015 that EMDR is able to help veterans, that and 74% of them no longer felt any PTSD symptoms or trauma, and 80% retention rate. And these rates are much higher than a lot of the other therapies that are out there. So that's why we think this is a really good program for our returning men and women for home, and it can be active military or veterans.
This is Minnesota Military Radio, and we're talking about the Veterans Resilience Project. Sergeant Major, are you familiar with EMDR?
No, I'm not. And actually, I want to know exactly what it is. I mean, because you talk about statistics and how it can improve PTSD symptoms. And I'd like to know, because we got a lot of veterans that need some help with that. So how does the program work and what does it do?
Well, let's talk a little bit about this PTSD thing, because sometimes people come back from being deployed and they might have just not feeling just something right, or it might be something like some of the guys saw pop cans, and that was a signal that there was an IED. So they come back here and they see a pop can and it triggers them. So the thing about PTSD or trauma or a lot of these things that they misdirect our thoughts and our actions and put us into situations and have us do things that we maybe really don't want to do. And what the EMDR does, it takes the veteran and it works with them, and it actually reprograms the brain so that they are able to let go of that, you know, whatever trauma or thing, PTSD, happened to them. And the nice thing about that is that they don't have to relive the sequence. They don't have to relive the trauma or just what happened to them. That's a really big deal to the people.
Yeah, because often, you know, it triggers those memories, those emotions, and it could potentially cause some additional issues or problems for that veteran or service member.
It does, and so it's a wonderful program. It's at no cost to our veterans, and we've got therapists all around the state of Minnesota, so that they have a lot of different places they can go. And, you know, we can serve somebody up north or south here, and we really feel proud about that.
So, is this something that happens in a clinical setting? You go in and talk to a therapist, and how does it work? What do you experience when it happens?
Oh, boy.
Yeah, I'm envisioning getting wires hooked up to your head or something. And
Not at all.
Mr. Finley, we just slap him around a little bit, but I'm sure it's more scientific than that.
Well, it is more scientific than that, but the interesting thing about it is sometimes all it is a therapist moving their hands back and forth, or they may be looking at some lights. It's actually a very simple process, and the amazing thing about it, because I've had it, and it's just it rewires the brain, and it enables you to let go of these things, and so that you're not concentrated on whatever incident or thing happened to you, and then you come out of this thing so that's kind of behind you, you know, and you can start doing the things that you really want to do.
Sounds like hypnosis of some kind, but I'm sure it's putting you at ease and dealing with the pop can, if that was the issue or whatever it might have been, and with an experienced a clinician of some type, therapist that knows how to deal with those the PTSD that's causing the problem.
It does, because one of the things that art therapists are specially trained for, military trauma. And the advantage to that is that, you know, we've got people around that can do this and relate to the service person, the veteran or the active duty personnel. And that makes a really big difference when somebody can come in and talk your language, know what's going on, and have a bond.
So, Jim, the EMDR, is that a one-time thing, or is that two or three sessions? Do you know how that works?
It's up to 12 sessions, or however many you need. Many veterans report significant relief after just 6 or 8 sessions. It's also important to know that there are over 6 million people in the world that have been treated with EMDR, disaster victims, The fact of the matter is veterans are not the biggest group of folks that experience PTSD. It's accident victims and folks who have sustained other kinds of trauma outside of the military. The military's been using this for over 20 years to help service members return to combat.
And Jim, have you experienced the MDR?
I've not.
Okay, well, Eric, we gotta work on Jim.
I'll work on him really good.
Gentlemen, we have to take a short break. When we come back, we're going to talk more about the Veterans Resilience Project on Minnesota Military Radio. Please stay with us. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons. My co-host today is Doug Wortham. We've been talking to Jim Finley and Eric Wickheiser about the Veterans Resilience Project. And Doug, I think you had a follow-up question on the EMDR.
Yeah, I certainly do. And, you know, it sounds extremely intriguing on what the system, what the process can do for our veterans. And one of the things I'd like to know, so that's clear to our audience, is the service that's provided, the treatment. If I'm a veteran and I've received some type of trauma not relating to my military service, can I come and receive your services, or does it have to be tied to military service?
Typically, it has to be tied to your military service, although people that work in this field will tell you that it is not only or not always PTSD that shows up right away. It's other trauma that can show up and require help. Ultimately, as therapists work with people for a while and more of the story comes out, they can tie that to PTSD.
Okay, and we'll get the website, some information a little bit later in the segment, but if someone listening right now, they feel like, hey, I want to try this out, obviously we want them to contact you, and you'll go through kind of that screening process and determine whether or not you'd be able to provide the service to them.
Correct.
All right, thank you very much.
Eric, I want to come back to you. We've been talking about EMDR and the Veterans Resilience Project, but at the end of my briefing papers here, it says that your goals are to reduce or prevent veteran suicides, homelessness, and other tragic situations, and bring them all the way home. And tell us about your efforts, and those are two big issues that we're working on, reduce suicides and reduce homelessness.
Well, those are all very near and dear to me because I've seen people that have committed suicide. I had a very dear friend in that, and so, boy, it just it tugs on my heart, I got to tell you. And whether it's homelessness or whether it's people having alcohol, drug issues, violence, all of these things that, you know, happen to us when we get triggered and we start doing things that we really don't want to do, maybe not holding a job. These are things that we can help with. And so the big key is to get to an issue and get to a problem before it happens and before it gets really bad. So a lot of times we're working on, I'll call it, precursors to PTSD and trauma. You know, you want to get, if somebody's having a problem, they can call us up and just talk to us and see, you know, is this something we can help you with? And we've been able to help quite a few men and women with a lot of different issues. I'll mention military sexual issues, you know, trauma. That's another issue that we can certainly help with.
And Eric, do you coordinate your activities in these areas with other organizations here in Minnesota?
We really do with Minnesota Military Exchange, and we've talked to the CVSOs. We talk to everybody we possibly can. We love talking with people and letting them know what we do. And the one thing I really love about Minnesota is that a lot of us organizations help each other, so that we know what the other organization's doing, they know what we're doing, and it's a really wonderful place to be. It's kind of like we're going arm in arm, going in the same direction.
And it seems that each of the organizations takes a little bit different tact on it, a little different piece of it, but it all adds up to helping our veterans.
It does, and boy, that's really special because not in all states, all places, this happens.
And Jim, I like the tail end of the mission that says, and bring them all the way home. You were working on that your whole career over at Deed, make sure that our veterans got jobs. And now that you're retired, you're on the board of the Veterans Resilience Project. You're still helping our veterans to bring them all the way home.
That's right. And the fact of the matter is, you know, we run into a lot of veterans that are looking for something. They just don't know what it is. Mm-hmm. And EMDR is an option that, again, has been used worldwide and is very successful. And there are really no unknowns about EMDR. It's been very well studied. Just Google EMDR, and there's a lot of information out there, and it's got a particularly purposeful impact on veterans.
Jim, great to see you back in the studio again on a different mission, but keeping busy and staying out of trouble, that's great. Eric, we got about a minute left. Any final thoughts about your organization?
Well, one of the things I'd like to do is thank Commissioner Herkey of the Minnesota Veterans Affairs. He supported our veterans, reducing suicides and supporting our mental health initiatives for Minnesota veterans, and that is really appreciated. I've talked to a number of vets, and boy, this is what they really need. They need the support, and I'm really pleased that we have the organizations in place to get that support.
Very good, sir. 30 seconds left. If our listeners want to help, are you looking for volunteers, and how can they find you?
We would love some volunteers, and it can be, if you want to just contact us, we'd love volunteers because we can certainly use the help. And the other thing we're doing is letting other veterans know that we have an avenue for them to get help with.
And your secure website?
Our secure website is www.resiliencemn.org.
Resiliencemn.org.
Yes.
Very good. Thank you, Eric.
You're welcome. Thank you, Jim.
That was Jim Finley and Eric Wickheiser from the Veterans Resilience Project on Minnesota Military Radio. Joining me now is Marty Howes, who is the Roseau County Veteran Service Officer and the president of the Minnesota Association of County Veteran Service Officers. Marty, welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio.
Thank you very much, Mr. Lyons. It's a pleasure to be here today.
Marty, I understand your organization has a spring and a fall conference, and you just finished your fall conference. And can you tell us what happens at those conferences?
You bet I can. We were very fortunate that we were able to hold this conference this year, you know, because of COVID and that, and it was our 76th conference. We had our elections, and a few of us moved through the chairs, and I was elected to have the honor to serve as the president of MACVSO for this year. They're one-year terms, and I'm excited to do what I can for the association.
Congratulations, Marty, and we'll look forward to talking to you every few weeks all year to find out what your county veteran service officers are focusing on. Can you tell us what else happens at these conferences?
You bet I can. There's a CVSO in every county in the state of Minnesota, and we all get together and we receive some of the best training that you can get with regard to veterans' benefits. And we study anything from ethics to specific procedures for filing claims, death and burial benefits, and just so much more. But more importantly than that, it's a team-building opportunity, and that's where we get that chance to enhance our relationship as CVSOs working together across the state, as well as, you know, developing our relationships with other service organizations like the DAV, the American Legion, and the VFW, you know, just to name a few. And we also have representation there from the VA and the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs, which we work very closely with, and it's just a great opportunity.
Marty, we've been to a couple of your conferences, and it's an opportunity for you to expand your Rolodex of people that you know and organizations that are helping our veterans. And speaking of those relationships, can you give us an example of how that gives you the advantage to help our veterans?
Well, you know, we're the first line that's out there, and we get the word out pretty well in our communities. And, you know, like most recently, in cooperation with the Governor's Challenge to Prevent Suicide among veterans and their families, we've been working together as a collaborative unit, also with the VA, the VHA, and Mental Health Services Administration through the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs. And every CVSO office in the state of Minnesota is handing out gun locks to any veteran or family, no questions asked, and the veteran can get one. And it just adds one more step to make things safe. And, you know, we just had the 20 years since 9/11, and as a welcome home in a thank you in coordination with the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs, you can also come see your CVSO and get a coin that says thank you for your service and welcome home, recognizing these GWOT vets.
Marty, we just got a few seconds left, but we've been telling our listeners for years that if a veteran is listening, if they've got any kind of medical issue related to their service while they were in the whatever armed forces they were in, all they have to do is go to their county veteran service officer. You and your fellow county veteran service officers make it your business to know all the resources available to help our vets.
You bet. We are that first step, and we're going to be there. We'll follow through with not only just the claim, but ensuring that you're getting the services that you need, how to get them, where to get them, phone numbers, anything you need, we're going to have it, and we're going to help you out.
So go see your county veteran service officers. Marty, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you, Mr. Lyons.
That was Marty Howes, the president of the Minnesota Association of County Veteran Service Officers. I have one message today. Are you a current or former military member looking for a job with a company that appreciates your services? Join Career Force for the 15th annual Veterans Career Fair on November 3rd at the Earl Brown Heritage Center in Brooklyn Center, Minnesota. All veterans, current service members, and military spouses are welcome to attend the best veterans hiring event of the year. Find out more at careerforcemn.com/veterans. That's careerforcemn.com/veterans. We're just about out of time. Thanks for listening to this edition of Minnesota Military Radio. I'd like to thank our guests for joining us this week, Lieutenant Colonel Jake Helgestad, Jim Finley, and Eric Wickseiser from Veterans Resilience Project, Marty Howes from the Minnesota Association of County Veteran Service Officers, Doug Wortham, my co-host today, Commissioner Larry Herkey, the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs, and finally, Minnesota's Adjutant General, Major General Sean Mankey. Please join us next week as we talk about education benefits with the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs and hear from one of Minnesota's first members of the United States Space Force. That's coming up next weekend on this station or online anytime at minnesotamilitaryradio.com. I'm Tom Lyons, and I hope that you make a difference in someone's life this week.
Minnesota Military Radio is a production of iHeartMedia, the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs, the Minneapolis VA, Beyond the Yellow Ribbon, and the Minnesota National Guard. Your host is Tom Lyons, founder and owner of Phelan Partners Limited, a merger and acquisition advisory firm. Tom is a life member of the American Legion, VFW, Vietnam Veterans of America, and the DAV. For podcasts and the latest updates, follow us at Minnesota MilitaryRadio.com.